Chapter 7. Judah, Joseph, and Jacob. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I have set you over all the land of Egypt." Genesis 41, verse 41. Our study continues in Genesis 38, which is an interlude in Joseph's story. After the sale into slavery, Judah, who had proposed the trade, enslaved himself in a different way. He left the hill country, went down to the coastal plain, and lived among the indigenous people, marrying a Canaanite woman. Genesis 38, verses 1 and 2. Together they had three sons, Onan, and Shelah. The abbreviated account of Judah's life, away from his father and brothers, covers most of the 22 intervening years until he meets Joseph again. In this history of Judah's family, Genesis records that the first son married the Canaanite Tamar. As with other members of Jacob's family, moral problems never seem far from the surface. In Ur's case, his wickedness brought about his death, leaving his childless widow to become Onan's wife by what is known as the law of levirate, and thereby have children. Onan was unwilling to show such outgoing concern, and while he appears to have been happy to have intercourse with Tamar, the verb form suggests more than once, it was coitus interruptus, thus failing to raise up an heir to his brother, verse 8. For this, God eventually dealt with him by taking his life. Judah then asked his daughter-in-law to return to her parental home until his third son would be old enough to marry. The problem was that he never intended to have her marry Shelah, thinking that this son might also die as a result. Tamar exacted the price for this betrayal by disguising herself as a prostitute and deceiving the now widowed Judah into fathering a child by her. Not knowing that he was the father, his reaction to the news that his daughter-in-law was pregnant by whoredom was to call for her death by burning, verse 24. Tamar revealed what had happened, and Judah admitted that he was the wrongdoer, the betrayer. As it was, Tamar had twins, Perez and Zerah. Perez became an ancestor of the Israelite King David, Ruth chapter 4, verses 18 through 22, and of Jesus Christ, Matthew 1, verses 3 through 16. The underlying reason for this interlude in the story of Joseph is to record Judah's repentance and his unchanged status in the line of Jacob, in contrast to Reuben, despite his wrong decisions in selling Joseph and deceiving his father. The account also provides a contrast with the righteous Joseph, who meanwhile had successfully resisted sexual advances. Joseph was on a promising path in Egypt. We learned that just as Yahweh had been with the patriarchs, so he was now with Joseph. Genesis 39, verse 2, 3, 21, and 23. The Pharaoh's chief of the guard, Potiphar, had bought him from the Ishmaelite traders and put him to work in his home. Entrusted with more and more responsibility, Joseph seemed set until his good looks attracted the attention of his master's wife, who tried to seduce him on several occasions. But Joseph knew that this would be wrong, demonstrating knowledge of divine moral law well before Moses' time, when it was arranged in written form as the Ten Commandments. He said to her, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Verse 9. Still, she pressured him. His final refusal led to her grabbing his outer garment and spitefully producing it as evidence that he had tried to rape her. As a result of this false accusation, Potiphar had Joseph put in prison. Though God gave him favor with the prison keeper, verses 21 through 23, it would be several years before his release. In the meantime, two notable prisoners arrived, Pharaoh's cupbearer or butler and his baker. Now Potiphar put Joseph in charge of them. Chapter 40, verse 4. Joseph was able to interpret their dreams, asking that when free, the butler would plead his case before Pharaoh. But Joseph was to be disappointed. The baker was executed, while the cupbearer promptly forgot about the man who had interpreted his dream. Verse 23. Joseph was to wait another 2 years in prison until the opportunity arose for the interpretation of two much more significant dreams. This time, Pharaoh himself was the recipient. He saw seven healthy cows come up from a river to feed in a pasture. Seven ugly, gaunt cows followed them and devoured the healthy ones. The second dream involves seven healthy heads of grain on one stalk being devoured by seven blighted heads. Asking his magicians and counselors for the interpretation of these troubling images, Pharaoh could get no satisfactory explanation. The cupbearer then spoke up, recalling his promise to Joseph and telling Pharaoh of the young man's skill of interpretation. Sending for Joseph, the ruler heard that the ability came not from the man himself. Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." Chapter 41, verse 16. The ruler then added more details to the first dream and explained that the river was the Nile, that the first animals were sleek and fat, the others gaunt, ugly, and lean. Yet when the starved cows devoured the healthy ones, there was no appreciable improvement. He repeated the second dream, almost verbatim. Joseph explained that the dreams carried the same message, a prediction of 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine in Egypt and the surrounding lands, verses 25 through 32. He advised the appointing of a leader to supervise the collection of a reserve into city granaries, 20% for each of the 7 years of abundance. Under Pharaoh's control, this would feed the land during the famine. The Egyptian ruler now appointed the 30-year-old Joseph to the post of vizier, or prime minister, to supervise the famine relief effort. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." So he set him over all the land of Egypt. Verses 42 and 43. It is puzzling on the surface that Joseph did not contact his father once he rose to power in Egypt. But we may arrive at a reasonable explanation by going back over the details more carefully. Joseph may have come to believe that Jacob's anger over the dream of exaltation above his parents and brothers, chapter 37, verses 9 through 11, had led his father to expose him needlessly to the brothers' resentment. When Jacob sent Joseph to find them as they grazed their flocks near Shechem, verses 12 through 14, it resulted in the plot to kill the lad, later modified to selling him into slavery. Joseph may have concluded that his father was unremittingly angry with him, in the way he had been with Simeon and Levi after their attack on Shechem. Chapter 34, verse 30, chapter 49, verses 5 through 7, and with Reuben, after he slept with his father's concubine, chapter 35, verse 22, and chapter 49, verse 4. Indicative, perhaps, of Joseph's sense of abandonment is his taking on a new life and identity in Egypt, including Pharaoh giving him the name Zaphnath-Paaneah, God speaks and he lives, the gift of an Egyptian wife, Asenath, and the fathering of two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Of the firstborn's Hebrew name, Joseph said, "For God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction." Chapter 41, verses 51 and 52. This demonstrated Joseph's continuing attachment to the God of his fathers, despite his marriage to the daughter of the priest of On, a sun worshiper. As the famine took hold, Pharaoh sent his people to Joseph to buy food. Because surrounding lands suffered the same fate, visitors began to seek out supplies in Egypt. This development brought Joseph and his brothers back into contact 20 or more years after their last meeting. Jacob sent 10 of his sons to Egypt in search of food, keeping Joseph's younger brother Benjamin at home. Chapter 42, verses 1 through 4. No doubt he feared losing his remaining son by Rachel. When the brothers arrived, Joseph recognized them, but did not reveal himself, unknowingly fulfilling the prophetic dream that had caused such problems in the family. They bowed to him. In response, he asked where they came from, accusing them of being spies. They denied the charge, saying they were honest men, part of a family of 12 sons, with a father in Canaan. They said the youngest was with his father, and one son was deceased. Pretending not to believe them, Joseph put them in jail for 3 days, then offered to provide them with grain to take home, keeping one brother as security till they return with their youngest brother as proof of their story. What immediately came to their minds was what they had done to Joseph. The brothers were guilt-stricken as they recall their brother's pleas for mercy. We saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. Verse 21. The firstborn, Reuben, was particularly overcome. He had tried to dissuade his brothers from their plot. Verse 22, chapter 37, verses 21 and 22. Joseph listened to all that was said, the brothers thinking that he could not understand Hebrew since an interpreter was present. Chapter 42, verse 23. Then he chose Simeon, the second eldest, as the one to stay behind. He sent them on their way with food and secretly put the money they had paid for grain into their sacks. When they were back in Canaan and discovered this, they were troubled along with their father. The loss of Joseph, the ransom of Simeon, and the demand that Benjamin return with them to Egypt was too much for Jacob. "You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more, Simeon is no more, and you want to take Benjamin. All these things are against me." Verse 36. Reuben now offered to be surety for Benjamin if his father would allow the youngest to travel to Egypt. Jacob was unwilling, but the famine became so severe that their grain ran out, and a return to Egypt offered the only possibility of relief. Now Judah, who had suggested the sale of Joseph to the slave traders, offered to be surety for Benjamin if Jacob would release his youngest for the journey. Reluctantly, Jacob agreed, telling them to take gifts of balm, honey, spices, myrrh, pistachios, and almonds. There was some food in Canaan, but not the much-needed grain. They should also take twice as much money as before, including the funds that had been found in the sacks of grain. Chapter 43, verses 11 and 12. When they arrived in Egypt, Joseph gave instruction that they should be brought to his house. Afraid, they speculated that the money in their sacks was the issue, and they were about to be punished by being made slaves and dispossessed. Joseph's steward reassured them that he had received payment. No doubt Joseph had paid from his own resources, and that what was returned was indeed their own. Simeon was then freed to meet his brothers. When Joseph returned to his home, they were taken to meet him. Giving him their gifts, they bowed to him, again fulfilling the prophetic dream. Joseph asked if their father was still alive. Answering, they bowed again. Hearing that his father was well, Joseph asked whether the youngest among them was Benjamin. Suddenly, at seeing his brother after so many years, he could not control his emotions. Leaving the room, he composed himself and came back to dine with them, making sure that Benjamin's plate was filled more than any other. He also arranged their seating from eldest to youngest, something that also surprised them. How did he know? Joseph was now about to carry out the next part of his plan to bring all the family to Egypt. He instructed his steward to fill sacks of grain for the brothers, to return their money secretly as before, and to add his silver cup to Benjamin's sack. Soon after they left for Canaan, Joseph sent his steward after them to accuse them of stealing. They were stunned. Why would they steal? So sure of their innocence, they allowed a search, saying that if anything were found, that man should die and they should become slaves. Joseph's test was to see if they would abandon Benjamin as they had him when it suited their purpose. At the discovery of the silver cup, they were so shocked that they tore their clothes and went back to face Joseph. Pretending to have found them out by divination, Joseph accepted their general confession of guilt and said he would take Benjamin as a slave and let them return to their father. Now a distraught Judah came forward to remind Joseph of their father's situation. Old, with a favorite son of his old age, bereaved of another son. Judah said that Jacob would die if Benjamin did not return. He begged Joseph to keep him in Benjamin's place. This, in effect, was Judah's recognition of his guilt in selling Joseph. Now he was willing to stand ransom for his father's favorite, Benjamin. It was also reflective of the brothers' concern for their father, a concern which they had not shown when they sold Joseph and lied to Jacob about his disappearance. At this, Joseph could not contain himself any longer. Sending all but his brothers out of the room and weeping loudly, he told them who he was. Stunned once more, they didn't know what to say. Again, Joseph explained who he was, now telling them not to be upset with themselves for what they had done to him, because God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Genesis 45, verse 7. With several hard years of famine ahead, Joseph asked them to bring Jacob and his entire household to Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near to me. You and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. Verses 9 through 11. The emotional reunion gave way to Pharaoh's expression of favor. They were to be given all the help they needed to make the journey back to Egypt with their father, where they would live without want. Verses 17 and 18. When Jacob met his returning sons, he too could not believe the story. Joseph alive? Impossible. Yet they proved it to his satisfaction, and together they traveled back via Beersheba. There God appeared to Jacob, saying, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. Chapter 46, verses 3 and 4. Jacob and his progeny in Egypt amounted to 70 persons, including Joseph's sons, but not including any wives, husbands of daughters, or most granddaughters, verses 26 through 27. There may therefore have been upwards of 300 people in the party when servants and other family members are considered. They went to Goshen, an area rich in pasture land, and generally thought to have been in the eastern Nile Delta. It was there that Joseph first met his father again after their long separation. Joseph planned that some of them should meet Pharaoh, with the object of his granting them land in Goshen, since they were livestock breeders. Their occupation would keep them separate from the Egyptians, who did not regard shepherds highly. Pharaoh was accommodating, even offering employment to any among them who were expert herdsmen. At his meeting with Jacob, Pharaoh asked about his age. Jacob's reply was meaningful, honest, and reflective of a life filled with much sorrow. The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage. Chapter 47 and verse 9. During the continuing famine, Joseph's wise resource management gradually gave Pharaoh control of all the land in Egypt in return for grain. Verses 13 through 26. Jacob lived another 17 years in Egypt, and his family grew large. Toward the end, he called Joseph to his side to have him promise that he would bury him with his fathers in Canaan. Shortly after this, Jacob fell ill, and Joseph took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, to visit him. Jacob reminded Joseph of God's promise of descendants and property. God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and blessed me, and said to me, Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you. I will make of you a multitude of people. This was fulfilled by the time of their famous departure. See Exodus chapter 1 and verse 7. And give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession. Genesis 48 verses 3 and 4. Jacob now singled out Joseph's Egyptian-born sons for a special blessing and inclusion in the family of Israel. As he reached out to the two young men, Jacob crossed his hands, placing his right hand on the head of the younger, giving him the elder brother's blessing. This is one more example in Genesis of the unexpected outcome, particularly as concerns the one who is chosen and the one who is not, Ishmael and Isaac, Jacob and Esau, Reuben and Joseph / Judah. Specifically, Joseph's two sons would be included in the family line of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Genesis 48, verse 16. They would be adopted by Jacob and take up the birthright position of Reuben and Simeon, verse 5, while Judah would have preeminence as ruler, First Chronicles 5, verses 1 and 2. Together, Ephraim and Manasseh would grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. Joseph tried to correct what he assumed was his father's error, but Jacob insisted that this was his intention. I know, my son, I know. He, Manasseh, also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother, Ephraim, shall be greater than he, and his descendant shall become a multitude of nations. Verse 19. The future for these two sons of Joseph was to include greatness and many descendants, but those from Ephraim would become the more dominant, not always numerically. See Numbers chapter 1, verses 32 and 35, and Numbers 26, verses 28 through 37. But in terms of leadership position, eventually, once the children of Israel returned to the land of promise, the name Ephraim would be applied to the northern tribes of Israel, a multitude of nations, peoples, tribes. See Isaiah chapter 7 and verse 2, 5, 9, and 17, and Hosea chapter 9, verses 3 through 16. Jacob knew that his days were coming to an end, and he told Joseph that after his death, the God they served would bring the family back to the land of Canaan, a prophecy of the Exodus. Genesis chapter 48 and verse 21. Soon after, he called all his sons together to explain their future as tribes. Chapter 49, verse 1 and 28, in terms of their individual character and history. Reuben's sexual sin in displacing his father with the concubine Bilhah was the cause of his displacement from the birthright. His emotionally unstable character meant that he would not excel in the way that he should have by his preeminent position in the family, verses 3 and 4. Jacob's disassociation with the character of his second and third-born sons, Simeon and Levi, is recorded next as he recalls their fierce anger and extreme violence against the men of Shechem, Genesis chapter 34. Cursed be their anger, chapter 49 and verse 7. As a result, they would be scattered among the forthcoming tribes of Israel, rather than having territories of their own. The first three sons were, in effect, not blessed, but shown the result of their embedded traits. With Judah, the direction shifts. He was to inherit part of the firstborn's removed blessing. Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. Verses 8 and 10. As time went by, the tribe of Judah emerged in a powerful leadership role, pictured in the form of a lion, verse 9. Ultimately, the Messiah would come from this tribe, verse 10. Zebulun was to become a tribe that lived by the sea, close to Sidon on the Mediterranean coast, verse 13. In the history of Israel, the tribe of Zebulun was landlocked on both east and west by other Israelite tribes, but their position on major trade routes would make it easy for them to engage in commerce, including seaborne trade. Nearby territorially, Issachar was prophesied to become strong, agrarian, and predisposed to an easier life, verses 14 and 15, yet also benefiting from proximity to the sea and overland trade, Deuteronomy chapter 33, verses 18 and 19. Dan would become a judge and a successful fighter that would wait for Yahweh's rescue, Genesis 49, verses 16 through 18. Similarly, Gad would be attacked, yet retaliate, verse 19. His territory would be east of the Jordan River, open to invasions from the deserts and requiring constant oversight. Jacob made only two comments about Asher, that he would eat fat or oily food and produce delicacies suitable for kings, verse 20. After the children of Israel returned to the land, his territory was along the Mediterranean coast and well known for olive production. A short verse explains that Naphtali would be free to run like a deer, agile in combat, and capable of good use of words. These characteristics would become evident later in the tribe's history. See Judges chapter 4, verses 1 through 24, and chapter 5, 1 through 31. The final two blessings from Jacob concern his two sons by Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin. What was to become of them in days to come? Benjamin is described in terms of a warrior, the type of a wolf. He would successfully fight, tear in pieces, and share the spoil, Genesis chapter 49 and verse 27. Later scriptures indicate that several fighters came from Benjamin in the years ahead. The longest entry in the account of Jacob's final blessing is devoted to Joseph, verses 22 through 26. It focuses on the fruitfulness and wealth that would come to him through his descendants, Ephraim and Manasseh, who combined would become numerically the largest of the tribes. The account recalls Joseph's many years of struggle against persecutors and his spiritual resilience, faith, and reliance on God, who is referred to in these verses by five separate names: the mighty God of Jacob, the shepherd, the stone of Israel, the God of your father, and the Almighty. When Jacob completed his review and blessing, he explained that his burial place should be with his family members, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebekah, and his wife Leah, near Mamre in Canaan, verses 29 through 31. Immediately after he had finished speaking, he died. Mourned by the Egyptians for 70 days, Jacob was embalmed in the manner of his host country, and with Pharaoh's permission, was taken to Canaan for burial. Joseph's brothers were naturally somewhat concerned that after Jacob died, Joseph might retaliate against them. Sending a message to him, they said that Jacob had directed them to approach him for forgiveness. Joseph's response was characteristic of him: "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. Now therefore do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." Chapter 50, verses 19 through 21. Joseph's own death did bring great changes in the lives of the family, but that did not come for another 54 years. In that time, he saw three generations of Ephraim's and Manasseh's children before his death at age 110. He was embalmed and put in a coffin, verse 26, until the fulfillment of his prophetic words to his family, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here, back to the land of Canaan," verse 25. So closes the first book of the Bible, with the slightly suspenseful coda as to what the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would face in Egypt as the era of Joseph passed.